taking a left up there, kind of in the bight of where Antioch, Syria, would be, headed down the coast because of the wind. And then Paul warns them not to set sail. They don't follow his advice. He's told that don't let them leave the ship, that they're going to lose the ship, but they're all going to be saved. So they are shipwrecked, as we saw at the end of chapter 27. And by the way, we're in the last chapter of the book, 28. So a couple of more weeks and you will fall into that group of people who have persevered to the end of 28 chapters. This is our 50th lesson. I think it's about our 60th week in Acts, because some of the lessons we doubled up on. I remember John MacArthur one time preached through John. And John MacArthur's church in California, they have a Sunday morning service, a Sunday night service, and a Wednesday night service. Well, you better not miss, because he preaches expositorily right through that book, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. So he doesn't like just save it for Sunday morning. He goes, so if you missed, you know, you've missed a section. I think he was 3 years in the Gospel of John, preaching three times a week. So you have gotten a drink of water from Niagara Falls going through 28 chapters of Acts in about 60 weeks or 60 lessons. So we find out that they're shipwrecked right there in this little island, Malta. Malte is how it's pronounced in the Greek, but Malta, which is a inhabited island. There's not much known about it at that time. And they wash up the shore on there because, remember, Paul was promised, don't let anybody, when they were going to lower the ship's lifeboat or little rowboat like they would use to go to shore, he said, keep them all in the ship. They stay in the ship. The ship will be lost, but they will be saved. Reminds me a lot of Noah's Ark. As long as they stayed in the ark, they were okay. And so that's where we find ourselves now, at the beginning of chapter 28. They're shipwrecked, and they're on Malta. In verse 1, it says, when they had been brought safely through, then we found out that the island was called Malta. So they wash up the shore on Malta, and the natives, that's an interesting term there, natives. We normally think of Indians, people that are native to the islands. This word here is the Greek term that's translated here, natives, is very close to the word in Hebrew for the Tower of Babel. Because here is Barbas, and it's related to that word in Hebrew, which just means that they can't understand their language, so they call them babblers. Because, and I remember the first time that I went to Hungary, and I was standing there, and Deborah may remember this, and Artila was my translator, and the guy up front was talking to the whole group of us. We took 60 different families on 2 4-week stints. So there was 2 weeks, 30 families and their college kids that went and put on sports camps and Bible study and taught English. And then they left and we all stayed. And then another 30 came. And families, and they worked for 2 weeks. And I remember the first time the guy was standing up front after we got there, and he was explaining everything, and he was speaking Hungarian. And I remember thinking, there is no way he is communicating. I mean, there, you know, even when you take Greek. Now, Hebrew's not that much, but, you know, from the Greek language, we have some similarities. I mean, cosmos means world, cosmopolitan. Cardia, heart, cardiologist. There's some connection. Hungarian, there is no connection. I mean, you can't even explain it. I remember when Miranda came back and I asked her, what did she think of the language? And she says, there's nothing to think about it. I mean, and I said, yeah, it's like Babel, isn't it? And she said, yeah. And so that's what this word for natives means. It means that you just find a group of people, you're a foreigner, they have a language that is like babbling. Which leads me into our little grandchild that we got to spend the whole week with, Ella. She is babbling, and she's starting to say little parts of words like ha and ba. And, you know, so she's a native right now, but soon she will. I told Will and Ashley, you know, she's about ready to take her first steps, and I said, you're going to spend these first 10 months teaching her how to stand up and walk, and you're spending this time trying to teach her how to talk, and then you're going to spend the rest of the time trying to teach her how to sit down and be quiet. So the natives here showed us extraordinary kindness. Another word jumps off the page in the Greek text here is extraordinary kindness. What do we call someone who is wealthy and they set up organizations or they help to raise money or give money to help other people? Exactly. Guess what this word is in the Greek? Exactly. So that's a great term there to know. So these natives were very kind, and not just kind, but extraordinary. Now, if you've read Don Richardson's, who is a missionary's book, The Peace Child, anybody read that book? You haven't? You don't read about missionaries and their autobiographies or their trips and stuff? That's one you need to read. Peace Child by Don Richardson. He goes into natives, and unknowing to him, here's what the natives' philosophy of capturing their prey is. We will be very hospitable. We will be extraordinarily kind to them. We will invite them over for dinner. We will prepare the food. And when we can stand it no longer and we know that we've got them sucked in, we will invite them to a special dinner where they become the dinner. It's about cannibals who just right up on the edge, as long as they can, the longer they can go with the deception. So every time I read this, I think about Peace Child by Don Richardson, where these natives are showing extraordinary kindness. Hopefully, and it turns out, they weren't the same kind of natives that Richardson dealt with. And he says, for because the rain that had set in and because of the cold, they kindled a fire and received us all. So they're there on this island. The natives come. They're very cordial to them, extremely nice. They build a fire. And notice what takes place in verse 3. Something that I almost get paralyzed about if I'm ever walking in about sunset in August, when all the copperheads are kind of getting out. Yep, I feel the same way, Betty Jo. She just kind of went. And the last thing I want to do is look down and see a copperhead latched on to the side of my ankle or leg. But when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks, so this is my impression. He goes over, they got some wood piled up, he grabs up these bundles of sticks, and guess what's in that stick? A stick that moves. He goes over, he tosses it down in the fire, and boom, the snake latches onto him. Notice what it says. He says, he laid them on the fire, and a viper came out because of the heat and fastened itself on his hand. Now, a viper, one, indicates that it's poisonous, and two, the reaction of the natives indicates that they recognize that it was a poisonous snake. I've heard liberals and those that don't believe in the Word of God being the actual literal Word of God saying, well, it wasn't a poisonous snake. That's why he lived. They want to discount all miracles of the text. Verse 4, when the natives saw the creature hanging from his hands, they began saying to one another, undoubtedly this man is a murderer. Superstition number one, wrong thinking number two. And though he has been saved from the sea, justice has not allowed him to live. Now we have to fight. You may not, but I know a lot of people that have to fight this. When something bad happens to somebody, they think must be sin in their life. They must have done something wrong. When someone has misfortune in their life, or when they get sick or something, back then and even now, people think, well, God must be punishing you for something that you did. God doesn't work that way. He may use that to discipline you, but how would you explain how wicked people prosper? Who's writing this? Luke. Luke is a physician. It is not Luke, but it is another doctor. Back in the late BCs, in around 400 BC, Hippocrates, who we get that comes from the Hippocratic Oath. They're not sure he wrote it, but he gets credit for it. He was the first medicine person that separated what we would call superstition or spiritual from clinical medicine. He actually coined the phrase in the beginning of some of his writings that said, it goes something like this. You need to diagnose and give healing time. That the body will, in time, if it can, heal itself. But most people want to snap back quickly. He separated that the position that was taken that someone's sick because of an evil spirit, or that they've done something wrong, or the gods were angry with them. He said, no, they're sick because they're human. Now, I don't think he went so far as to say because of sin, not directly their sin, but just the fall. That's why we get sick. It eventually reverts back to the fall and the impact that the fall had. But it's just a natural course of this life. So he separated that. So the natives are still thinking, though, listen, this guy must be a murderer. Even though he was saved from the sea, the gods have got him. Brought him to this island for him to get bit by a snake and die. Verse 5, however, he shook the creature off into the fire and suffered no harm. But they were expecting that he was about to swell up or suddenly fall over dead. But after they had waited a long time and had seen nothing unusual happen to him, they changed their minds and began to say, that he was a God. Now, that's a great way of thinking, isn't it? Now, let me ask you a question. If we do our due diligence here with what these natives are thinking and how they think, what can we conclude based from Paul's writings in the first chapter of Romans? I'm stretching your thinking here. Did these people know about Jesus? Why would they even think about the gods were either mad with Paul, or Paul survives the snake bite, therefore he must be a god? What are they thinking? They have looked out into the world and they have seen what? Creation. And within that general revelation, you remember that term? That God has revealed his attributes in creation, his invisible attributes in creation. They have responded to general revelation. You remember my premise? If someone responds positively to general revelation, I believe that God will get to them specific revelation. Guess what's going to happen here? There's no mention of Paul sharing the gospel with them here. But let me ask you this question. Do you think he did? If you know the Apostle Paul, there is no way he did not take advantage of this divine appointed time on this island with these natives, with this event, and what he's going to do later, and share the gospel. They think he's a god. What do you think they're going to think after verse 7? Healing the sick. Now in the neighborhood of that place were lands belonging to the leading man of the island named Publius. Now Publius is a popular name. It's a popular name for a ruler like Caesar. It's like a title. Who welcomed us and entertained us courteously for 3 days. And it happened... I love this. This is the closest thing you're going to get in the Bible to once upon a time. I'm so glad that the Bible doesn't begin with once upon a time, like in Genesis. In the beginning, if it had said once upon a time, boy, the liberals would have a heyday with that being a fairy tale, right? This is the closest you're going to get. And it happened. I call this a divine appointment. That the father of Publius was lying in bed afflicted with recurrent fever and dysentery. He's sick. And Paul went to see him. And after he prayed, he laid his hands on him and healed him. Paul's got their attention. Or should we say, God's got their attention. After this had happened, the rest of the people on the island who had diseases were coming to him and getting cured. They must have had a few people on the island that were fast of foot, went around the whole island telling people, hey, come see this guy. Man, he got bit by a snake. Wait a minute, let me back up. He suffered a shipwreck. Nobody suffers that storm that we just had off the coast of Malta. All the pieces of the ship are scattered all over the place, and all the people on the ship survived. And we build a fire, and this guy comes down with a bundle of sticks, throws them on a fire, a snake gets warmed up, he pops them in the hand, hangs on to him, he shakes him off. We're waiting for the guy to die. We know he's got to be an escaped convict. We know he's got to be some criminal. The gods of the sea couldn't get him, so the gods of the snakes are going to get him. He doesn't die. In fact, we waited a long period of time, just waiting. He's going to swell up. He's going to die. He's just sitting there. And then our ruler comes down, and he is very nice to him. And this guy, I think they call him Paul, finds out that his daddy's sick. He's been sick for a long time. He goes over, mumbles some words to this Father in heaven through this name of Jesus, and the guy's healed. He's all better. He's not sick any longer. Let's go see this guy. Everybody's coming, and they're getting cured. Now, I agree with this. Tom Constable, Dr. Constable, who I had for Acts at seminary, I can hear him just like it was yesterday saying, Luke doesn't see the need to say that Paul preached Christ. It's a given he preached Christ. Verse 10, they set sail to Rome. They also honored us with many marks of respect. And when we were setting sail, they supplied us with all we needed. All we needed. So from there, Paul's going to go to Rome. He's going to head to Rome. One of the things that I love about going through verse by verse books of the Bible, one is you preach the whole counsel of God, and two, you don't skip over things like this that most people would say, well, that's not, you know, most people aren't going to go, well, let's see, I got 66 books, I got something, I got to preach Sunday. You know, just because you got to preach don't mean you got something to say. So somebody asked me one time, why don't you preach topically? I said, because I don't want to go all the way down to Friday trying to figure out what I'm going to preach on. What should I preach on this week? Ah, watch the news. Oh, this is going on. I'll preach on that. Oh, I read the newspaper. Oh, I should preach on that. You would never open the Bible and go, you know, I think I'll preach about Paul spending a few days on the island of Malta. Nobody's ever going to pick that passage. Have you ever gone somewhere to a revival or to a conference and heard anybody preach on the first 10 verses of chapter 28 of Acts? No. Why? They're just not going to pick that. But it's packed with significant information about how God works. How God works. Save them all, shipwreck, snake bite, sick, they come out. They have responded to general revelation. In my heart of hearts, I believe Paul presents specific revelation to them. Any questions about what we've covered? I'm getting sad about coming to the end of this book. We're going to have to deal with the angels after this. No questions? All right. Thanks for coming. Stay cool and calm. Because the heat, sitting in traffic, you're like a double whammy.